You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with my good friend, Mr. Doug O'Brien. Yes, it seems like Thursday, but it's actually Friday. yesterday, we had Steve Gardonis on the show because he wasn't able to do the show today. And Doug graciously agreed to do the show today. And so here we are. How's it going, Doug?
It's going well.
How's your Lent going?
Actually, pretty good. With a few missteps, a few disciplines that I have missed on the occasional day, of which I try to not do, but other than that, pretty good.
You know, I've been doing okay on the discipline stuff, you know, just the here's the things that you're supposed to do for Lent. So, you know, the abstinence and stuff like that. But what I've just completely just am awful at is like all the actual spiritual and moral fruits that are supposed to come out of all that. I've been cranky and grumpy and, you know, nasty to people online and impatient and I'm just the worst, right?
Well, join the club. I mean, if I was to extend my actual thoughts since March 1st, I would have to say, yeah, I've had the same challenge. So,
yeah. Yeah. So it's, I don't know. I keep thinking, okay, this time for sure. it's the Bullwinkle syndrome, you know, I'm just bad at, and lazy, you know, I'm shocked at how lazy I am. And it's like something I can't afford to be because I'm self-employed. So it's, you know, if it's do the work or live in your car, it's kind of it, you know? So I have to get the stuff done, you know? So I've been cranking through. Yesterday I was working on a project, devoted like 6 solid hours to that project. But then afterwards, it was just like, okay, I'm done. I'm just glad
for me, because, you know, honestly, Mark, I had the same challenge. Is that, in fact, my wife today said to me about, I was telling her about this project that is now eating into Friday evening, which means I'm going to be less accessible to my family. And she goes, well, time management problem, I see. And, you know, I should have probably added that to my disciplines during lunch. Because I work on that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear you. Yeah. So anyway, that's what's been going on. I've been thinking today in particular. I have a friend who posted it was quite a beautiful homage to her father who died a year ago yesterday. And it just got me thinking about my own parents. This is now, my mom died in April of 2014. And so it's been 3 years now since I've been an orphan. And it's, you know, it's I'm 58 years old, yet it's kind of time to be an orphan, you know, that's because this is the time of life when that happens. But I don't know, it's just, you know, it's just gotten me thinking about my parents and how much I don't know if you are your parents still alive, or
my mother's still alive and my father passed away.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, I've been, you know, just thinking about that, just thinking about what I owe my parents and how grateful I am to them, and how much, you know, one of the great things that I wish I had really done, especially with my dad, was just to tell him that. It was just, you know, tell him how grateful I was to him for everything I owed him. But when he died, I hadn't yet really, I think, figured out how grateful I was. Mm-hmm. Still working, you know, like you do. He died when I was 25, and I had yet to work through a lot of those issues. But I think about that, you know, that sense of debt. You know, one of the things that you know, when the church talks about solidarity, one of the things it talks about is this idea of generational debts that we owe, how much we owe our civilization, you know, these huge unpayable debts that we can never give back to our fathers and our mothers and our ancestors, because, you know, here, have the English language free of charge, you know, and this vast civilization that you can't, you know, here, have all the works of Shakespeare and Forbidden Planet and, you know, a national park system and, you know, educational system and, you know, every fairy tale ever written, and here, have the Bible, you know, and just, and all of this stuff that your civilization just hands you. That's just your birthright, just because you happen to be born here, to, you know, the parents, that you had. And the only thing you can do as with grace, you know, the only thing you can do about the love of God is you can't pay it back. Because God doesn't need any payment from you, and because the people who gave you your civilization are all dead and gone. So what do? Well, you pay it forward, you know, so you give it to your kids free of charge, and you try to hand on and add a little bit to it with something that you've done, you know, and I don't know. So I just, that's been my Lenten musing for today. What do you, I mean, when you think about your parents and the debt that you owe them, what do you think about?
Well, you know, first I will say this. I was a rotten kid, you know, really terribly rotten, rebellious, a renegade, all the, you know, getting in trouble all the time. I'm sure this comes as a huge shock to you.
Oh, I'm stunned.
And that, of course, put me oftentimes at odds, especially with both of my parents. And mm-hmm. I have to say, I, in those teen years and even in my early 20s, I saw their discipline or their reining me in as a impingement upon my freedom. And it was only after I became a parent myself that I really understood the love they had for me. And I would just say, and this is not new to anyone, we've all probably thought this or said this or read it, but you really don't understand how much your parents truly love you until you become a parent. This idea of just an infinite sacrificial love for another, right? Where okay. And when you are a teen or you're a young adult, you just you're too narcissistic. You just don't see it. And I really have, you know, like with regrets with my father, I regretted the stupid arguments and the dumb rebellions and the and him not, you know, my viewpoint that he didn't get it, so I didn't share things when I should have shared things. And now as a parent myself, you know, I yearn for my kids to know that I got their back as best as I possibly can, and I will always love them. I'm always going to be there for them. And both my father and mother communicated that to me. I just wasn't really able to hear it. Now, for me, I'm very fortunate because my mother's still alive, and she plays a very active role in my kids' lives and in my life. And, you know, I just don't want her to rat me out too much to my kids. But no, so I mean, I'm kind of where you're probably going to go with this is that in the end, I do see my parents' love for me and then my love for my children as a pale, reflected love of God's love for us, right? Or how God the Father looks at us. And that, and I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful for that passing on of that notion. And especially, you know, you began the conversation about how, being a little angry and irritable during Lent, and those are things that you're trying to, you know, I had the same challenge, and, you know, unfortunately a lot of it's kid directed, right? It just reminds me, to step back and remind myself that I have to be a reflection, as pale as it might be, of God's love. Yeah. So they see that in me for them.
Yeah. I hope that I do that with my kids. You know, what I always, I mean, you know, the weird thing, of course, about becoming a father is you discover that all the things that you thought about your dad, you know, that he's omniscient. and that's the weird thing is, like, when you're a little kid, your dad is God the Father. I mean, he knows everything. He's all powerful. Yeah. He can do anything. And then later on, you know, you hit teenagehood and you go, why, he's just an idiot. And then you reach that age, you know, where you become a father and you realize he was just a mortal. That's all he was. He was just a man, you know, struggling the way you do and making the same mistakes you do. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Mr. Doug O'Brien talking about Lent, talking about our folks. And we'll be back on Connecting the Dots, Redbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Hello, and welcome back to Connecting the Dots. I am your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Doug O'Brien. And we were talking a little bit in the last thing about our fathers and our relationships to our fathers and mothers. And both of my parents have now died. My dad died when I was 25. My mom died a few years ago. And you look at the debt that you owe your father. One of the things that I appreciate about our faith is that Jesus, in his wisdom, gave the church a holy father. That was Peter's role. And that title, it's interesting. Bishops initially all over the world were called father by their flock. It sort of wound up becoming a title given to the See of Peter, but you can already see, you see Paul, for example, in 1 Corinthians, he tells the Corinthians, I became your father through the preaching of the gospel. And so that kind of filial relationship, are we still on the air? All right. I'm seeing the weird thing. No. I'm just seeing weird things coming through my Skype thing. So I thought maybe I've gotten cut off, but never mind. All right. It's all good. Jennifer is here and she says that I'm here too. So that means I'm here. But anyway, that relationship, you know, that filial relationship, and that's, you know, it's a different kind of relationship and something that comes more out of antiquity. We did not have, you know, David was not made president of Israel. Jesus is not the president of the Republic, People's Republic of Heaven. It's a different kind of thing. And part of what goes with the image of kingship is, in fact, a fatherly relationship. And so a family relationship. This is one of the things that Scott Hahn has spent a lot of time talking about, is that when we're talking about covenant, we're talking about a family relationship. And so that's how the New Testament conceives of relationship with God, and it's how relationships within the church are to happen. This is one of the reasons, of course, that the priest scandal was such an horrific betrayal, is because it's not like a relationship with an employer or something right. like that, you know, or some kind of business relationship. It's a family relationship. And when you lacerate those kinds of bonds, the hurt is far, far deeper. I've been thinking a lot about family relationships, as we were going into the show today. I was reflecting on how much I owe my dad and how much I owe my mom. The difference between a relationship between parent and child and any other kind of relationship is immense. I mean, I owe them my very body, 23 chromosomes from my dad and another 23 chromosomes from my mom. And that laid the foundation for who I am. Beyond that, my education, my outlook, the way I think about things, certainly not exclusive to them. I mean, there are a lot of things, a lot of ways that my parents looked at things that I just don't, and I never will. Either because I don't share their background. They were both children of the Depression. And I've never gone through something like that, children and children of global war. And I've never lived through something like that. But nonetheless, there's so much that I do owe them, and I'm so grateful to them. So, Mom, Dad,
yeah, but
thank you.
Can I just step on, just add to that, is that, as you were talking about this, I was reminded that it's National Catholic Sisters Week, and a very dear friend of mine is a Catholic sister, and she emailed me a couple hours ago that her father had passed. Now I know and love her and have deep affection for her. I don't know her father, but the immediate feeling that I had when I heard the news was just a deep kind of sadness for her loss, right? It's when you lose a parent, it really is a, I don't know if trauma is the right word, but it's a loss that's extraordinarily hard to convey, right? Because it is all the things that you just described. These are the people that gave you everything, shaped you, formed you. And even if you weren't close with them, there is almost a primal sense of gratitude that many people have, right? And, it's hard.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so anyway, I'm grateful to my parents for all that they gave me. And one of the things that includes, of course, are the bad things. Not everything about my relationship with my parents was good. There were some things there that I wish they had not done. Just as there are things in my own relationship with my children that I wish I had not done. I look back on my own, years as a father, which are ongoing, they're going to continue for the rest of my life. But you look back in particular on, your kids when they were little, and the things that you wish to God you had not said, or you wish that you had not done. And you think about that, and I think there are some things where I think I feel worse about them than my kids do.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there have been times when I've gone to my kids and said, I'm sorry I did this thing. And they're like,
what?
Yeah, okay. You know, it's like, no, you don't understand this. You were traumatized by this. Yeah, not so much, actually, you know. Well, I think you were, you know. I sure felt like you must have been at the time. And it's haunted me all these years, you know. But, of course, there are other things, I'm sure, that my kids have never discussed with me because it was too painful.
Yeah.
And I might have even forgotten what those incidents were, you know. You wonder about that. And I don't know that there are many times when parents and children ever really sit down and have those conversations. You know, I've thought about it, but part of me thinks, would this just embarrass my kids if I brought up any of this stuff? You know, just fights that we had, or, you know, times that I got mad, you know, or things like that, flew off the handle, yelled at them, you know, that kind of stuff. So it's just one of those things, you know. There were certainly times where I wished, after my dad's death, that I could have told him, you know, both, you know, the times when he hurt me, but also the times that I was really grateful for. So all of this meandering reflection, I guess, is just to say that, you know, to people who are out there listening, if your parents are still alive, cherish the time that you got with them. You know, they're not going to be alive forever. And it's a real gift to have them with you, you know, and when they're gone, they're gone.
That's an important takeaway, too, because as you're talking, I was thinking about my dad. I don't know if there's anything. It was the time not spent, you know, when my life got busy raising my own family that I regret the most, you know, spend the time when you can.
Yeah. I'm glad. One of the things I am grateful for is that my dad lived long enough to meet my then fiance. He actually died. We got engaged. He was so happy when we got engaged because he adored Jan. Just thought the world of her. Jan's one of these people. He was cleaning crab one day. You go out in Puget Sound, you catch crab, and you bring them home, you boil them, and then you have to crack them open and stuff. And so he's cleaning the crab, and it's a messy, you know, gooey job. And she was like, hey, can I help? And she just got in, rolled up her sleeves, and got in there and started cracking the crab. And, you know, and he was like, this girl is awesome, right?
Yeah, and you know, one look at her, you knew you married up. So that
that
helped a lot too.
Yeah, and then you know, we got engaged, and about a month later, he died. Bam.
Oh wow!
It was just, you know, and so he actually died during our betrothal period, and so it was an incredibly emotional wedding because we got married about a month and a half after his death. It was a Lulu of a year, but I'm so grateful that he got to know. Well, we will be back right after this. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here today with Doug O'Brien. When we get back, we're going to take a little look at how a lie becomes fact in the world of the Francis-hating media. We'll be back right after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Hey-o! And welcome back to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Mr. Doug O'Brien. And of course, we've been talking about Lent, and we've been talking about fathers. Speaking of fathers, we are just it's going to be Monday, the 4th anniversary of the election of Pope Francis, perhaps the most evil human being ever to sit in the Sea of Peter. This stuff just amazes me. It just kills me. So there has developed over the last 4 years, there has developed this weird kind of axis of Francis hating Catholics who are convinced that Jesus, as I of the Tiber put it, Jesus assumes new role as Savior Emeritus so that bloggers can take over saving the church from Pope Francis. And there's this like whole subculture of conservative Catholics who just hate Francis's living guts. They really do. And they tend to be pro-life or call themselves pro-life. And in their incredible blindness, they, you know, very often regard, you know, one of the great agents of salvation for the church as Donald Trump. Donald Trump is going to save us. And the people around Donald Trump are going to save him, to save us from Pope Francis. And so you get this weird, you know, one of the things that Trump has popularized the idea of fake news. And there is such a thing. There is a real phenomenon of fake news. I mean, there are whole sites out on the internet that generate fake news. That's what they do all day, is they write fake news, and it's, you know, it generally serves an ideological function. It's there to, so there's satirical news like The Onion, which is not, it's satire. It's not meant to be taken seriously, but there are also real fake news sites that tell you lies about reality. And this, the same people that constantly yell fake news, whenever something is reported that Donald Trump doesn't want to hear or makes him look bad, are the people who consume real fake news in immense quantities. And it's amazing to watch. So I watched this week as a fake news story was generated. And it's been amazing to sort of watch it snowball. And this happens all the time. This is one sample. This is not something that you run into in isolation. This kind of thing happens all the time. So there's a website out there that used to be a pro-life website. I mean, that was supposed to be the mission of the website, was report pro-life news. But with the election of Pope Francis and the growing ideological hostility of the website to Pope Francis, it's become more and more a website that's devoted to, A, bashing Pope Francis, and B, promoting kind of Trumpian Republic Catholicism. It's called LifeSite News, or as some of us refer to it, LieSite News, because it's so unreliable. It constantly is promoting stories that are just rubbish. So here's an example. This came out just the other day, March 7th. The headline is Italian Archbishop Pope Benedict retired due to, quote, tremendous pressure. So you're getting essentially a rumor from somebody in the Curia. That's basically what this story is about. There's no actual substance to it beyond the opinion of the Italian Archbishop. Now, to refresh, when Pope Benedict resigned, he made very clear in his resignation letter, because he's not an idiot, that he was doing this with complete freedom. There was no pressure being exerted on him at all. That's Pope Benedict's words. He did not do this under any pressure. There was no coercion. He did this because this is what he wanted to do and felt in his conscience that he should do. But the result of his resignation was the election of Pope Francis, the most evil human being ever to be elected to the papacy. And so the people who hate Pope Francis are looking for any way possible to deny that he's really the Pope, if they can do it. So what's one way to do it? Pope Benedict did not resign freely. And if he didn't resign freely, that means he's still Pope. So that's the background to this story. So an Italian archbishop says that Benedict resigned under tremendous pressure. That is a direct contradiction to what Benedict himself says. So they go on and they say, Archbishop Luigi Negri, who says he has visited Pope Benedict several times, quote unquote, since his resignation in 2013, is the only Italian bishop to have ever participated in the annual pro-life march in Rome. Now, something that's important to pay attention to, pro-life credentials are, they're the 007. If you say you're pro-life, then you can say anything else. Because you're one of the good guys, right? So, only Italian bishop to have ever participated in the annual pro-life march in Rome, Negri resigned as Archbishop of Ferrara Camacho in February after reaching the mandatory retirement age of 75. So he's a retired bishop. In an article published Monday by news outlet Rimini 2.0, Archbishop Negri said that while he has little knowledge of the inner workings of the Curia, quote, I am certain that the truth will emerge one day, showing grave liability both inside and outside the Vatican, unquote. So liability for what? Who knows? This is just a quote ripped, bleeding from its context. So the only actual words that we've got so far are tremendous pressure and that last line. And then it goes on, quote, it is no coincidence that in America, even on the basis of what has been published by WikiLeaks, some Catholic groups have asked President Trump to open a commission of inquiry to investigate whether the administration of Barack Obama exerted pressure on Benedict, he said. It remains shrouded in mystery for now, he said, quote, but I am sure that those responsible will find out. So what do we actually have in terms of actual fact? What we've got is a quote from a retired Italian bishop who says that some Americans, and those could be people who wear tinfoil hats, some Americans have asked President Trump to see if Obama pressured Benedict to resign. So that could be your crazy Uncle Sidney has gotten it into his head that Obama tried to get Benedict to resign. And so they've gotten, you know, some, you know, some they've gotten a piece of paper and they scrawled in crayon a letter to Donald Trump saying, hey, look into this. And in addition, what the bishop adds is, I'm sure that if somebody looks into this, they'll find out what's going on. And that's it. That's all there is, right? Is right. Some nuts in America think this crazy thing, and the bishop mentioned it. So that was March 7th. Couple of days later, well, one day later, on March 8th, an article appears now in Breitbart. Now, Breitbart is that bastion of reliable journalism. Breitbart is the one the other day that reported the crazy story that Obama had tapped Trump's phone in Trump Tower. An assertion for which there is zero evidence in the article and zero evidence that Trump can point to. But which Trump, in his infinite wisdom, decided to tweet about. So Breitbart picks up this story the next day. Now, not just anybody, by the way, at Breitbart picks up this story, but Thomas Williams. Now, who's Thomas Williams? Well, Thomas Williams is the disgraced former legionary priest who had a kid while he was a legionary priest and neglected to tell anybody that for several years. He got drummed out of the legionaries, and now he writes for Breitbart. He's their reliable go-to guy on Catholic faith. He's the one who was quoted in the New York Times saying that Steve Bannon told me that Pope Francis was a communist, and I believe it. And so he's a reliable source, as you can see. And he picks it up, and the headline now totally changes. Now the headline in Breitbart is, Italian Archbishop suggests Pope Benedict resigned under Obama pressure. Note how the story is mutating. We will be back right after this on Connecting the Dots. We're here today with Mr. Doug O'Brien. We're talking about how the lie machine works out there, generating fake news about the church. And we'll be back right after this on Redbox.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Hello, and welcome back to Connect Lots. Your host, and we are here today, pardon me, with Doug O'Brien, talking about this this peculiar evolution of this story that's happened this week. So on March 7th, LifeSite News came out with this quote from this archbishop saying that Benedict was pressured from office. There's zero evidence for that other than this bishop just claiming it. Benedict himself says that's not true. And then goes on and says, some random people in the United States have written to Trump asking him to, open a commission of inquiry to see how Benedict pressured Benedict or how Obama pressured Benedict out of office. So, some people think that this happened is really all that he's saying. He says it in a conspiratorial tone. Whenever people preface a sentence with, it is no coincidence, we're meant to hear, the shadowy hints of conspiracy there. But there's zero evidence for any of this. But nonetheless, they quote the bishop saying that some people think this. So the next day, Thomas Williams, disgraced former legionaries priest, who had a kid and didn't tell anybody while he was a priest and was drummed out of the priesthood, who now works for Breitbart News and is still, as he did when he was a legionary, lying through his teeth. And so he writes for Breitbart, and he has been quoted in the New York Times as favorably quoting Steve Bannon, describing Pope Francis as a communist. So he writes an article, and the headline in Breitbart is, Italian Archbishop suggests Pope Benedict resigned under Obama pressure. He doesn't actually even go so far to suggest that. He just says that some people think this. And so what Williams writes, he essentially summarizes the same paragraph. It's, quote, no coincidence, unquote, that some Catholic groups, quote, have asked President Trump to open a commission of inquiry, and so on and so forth. Citing other revelations by WikiLeaks regarding efforts by the Democratic Party to sway the direction of the Catholic Church in the United States. Now, there's no evidence for this. I repeat. There's still no evidence, but Breitbart has now turned it into an even more solid story. So then Moving on through the lie machine, the anti-Francis lie machine. The next day, somebody writes me and sends me a link from the Facebook page for Judge Jeanine Pirro. She is the judge who shows up periodically on Fox to help delude and confuse people. And so the Judge Jeanine Pirro page leaks that story from Breitbart, and then the commentary on it from Judge Jeanine Pirro's fan page says, "Worldwide Catholics were shocked when Pope Benedict XVI stepped down. It just didn't fit the dogma of the Catholic Church." Okay, right there, wrong, right? That's false. The Pope is free to resign. There is no dogma that says that he can't. That's wrong. Okay, the next thing it goes on and says, "The new Pope Francis came in and seemed rather radical." That's always the language that's used to say that he's a communist and he's, you know, perhaps not really even Pope and so on and so forth, "which did not go unnoticed by Catholics worldwide. It is a sad day to think Obama could interfere in the Catholic religion. Then again, Obama interfered in everything else, so why not? There was a time that I would have thought a story like this was a real stretch, not anymore." And so, with those words, this has become, now it's a fact. This is not even a suggestion anymore. Obama interfered in the Catholic religion, you know, and on and on. And that's how things go. And then there's like just literally thousands and thousands of comments on this. There's responses, nearly 1,000 shares. There's, you know, over 1,000 responses, hundreds and hundreds of comments. And the comments are, you know, this is an outrage, and, you know, Obama should go to jail for this, and you know, Pope Francis isn't even the Pope, you know, he's a fake Pope, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the mill just goes to work on this. And it's a complete disgrace, and it started with this fake news article from LifeSite News, working through Breitbart and becoming even more of a lie, and then becoming an established fact. And when you challenge it, of course, and point out that there is absolutely zero evidence for any of this, the people that want to believe it, you know, just the response is never has to do with dealing with actual facts. It simply goes back to, if you're attacking the article, then you're a liberal. You know, you probably have voted for Obama. You're a communist, you know, because you support this communist Pope. And there's no capacity for dealing with issues of fact that at the end of the day, all you've got is a bit of gossip from some retired archbishop who, you know, really wants to believe that Benedict didn't really retire freely because he doesn't like Francis. And that's it, you know.
But you know what? As you recount this, I'm. Do you remember there was a tabloid called the Weekly World News that was in the...
Yeah.
You know, in the, which had the best headlines, I must say.
Yes. With Bat Boy.
It was at, yeah, exactly, and all kinds of, you know, all yeah. kinds of wonderful things. And you know, it actually kind of took the sting off having to buy a gallon of milk at 9 o'clock at night when you'd rather be at home, right? and to be even handed, you know, the left has its versions of fake news. Some of it actually plays itself out on their on the editorial decisions as to what stories they run versus, you know, everything. But, you know, there is this aspect from our side that really is troubling, which is too many traditionalist Catholics buy these conspiracies and the worst thing about the Pope. You know, and you began this conversation about how our Lents were going. And, you know, one can only hope that some of these brothers and sisters in the faith would maybe really reexamine their fidelity to the See of Peter and the Pope that was chosen or elected ostensibly with the inspiration of the Holy Spirit by bishops chosen by two of the most Orthodox popes we could have asked for, Benedict and Pope John Paul II. So, I mean, yeah. You know, this irrational disdain for this Pope. And then, you know, like you said, this migration from crazy traditionalist thought to more commonplace conservative media to then where it becomes kind of a vicious cycle of repeating itself, therefore it must be true, right? You know, you say, you know, one person says, well, I saw it on LifeSite, and then says, well, I saw it on Breitbart. Well, you know, we have two witnesses. It must be true.
Oh, well, that's true. Yeah.
You know, but it is unfortunate that this is where the church finds itself. And I'm, you know, again, I'm just continually confused and saddened by those Catholics who are otherwise Orthodox but traditionalist that just cannot seem to separate their faith from their political agenda. The idea that Obama had any influence whatsoever on Pope Benedict is so absurd that it's just, it really is. That's a tinfoil moment. You know, that's a conversation you have with someone that is wearing tinfoil on their head, and you just need to get out of the room quickly. You know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it really is a shame. And the thing that I find most sinister about it is the conflation of this, you know, this kind of political agenda with the gospel. It's the number one reason that I'm so gravely concerned about conservative Catholicism and its alliance with the party of Trump is because of this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know,
with I might add a practical application, which is when we speak about these immigration policies that he promotes, there is a real world impact that truly does disrupt families, causes real pain, and is contrary to Christian teaching. It's contrary to the gospel, frankly, period. Right. And so this is not just an academic, you know, taste preference of one party or the other. There are real life impacts for real live people that is contrary to the gospel.
Yeah. Yeah. I just saw today about a woman who's been here for 20 years. She has three kids and she's being deported back to Africa. The other day, I saw a story about a guy who's grabbed and sent back to Honduras. He's been here since 2006 when he came here when he was a kid. You know, a woman who came here when she was 7 years old, you know, being sent home or being sent away, you know, to some other country now. These things are evil. And
yeah, and it just shows that fake news. Yeah, fake news is not simply, there is a real world impact here.
There is a real world impact. Doug O'Brien, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. Our producer today was Jennifer Longworth. And you've been listening to Connecting the Dots. And I will be back on Monday with Sherry Antonetti. Until then, have a great day.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.